some facts. 1 in 5 children are obese. 2 in 5 adults are obese. The rate at which we are becoming obese has doubled since 1990. Now, a question. What should we feed the family?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1,387th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and Podcast. There are costs to this obesity. Let's add them up. There are the direct costs of medical care and treatment of obesity and health-related conditions, including doctor visits, hospital stays, surgeries, medications, and medical devices. There are the costs of obesity-related diseases, such as type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, hypertension, stroke, certain cancers, and musculoskeletal disorders. There are out-of-pocket costs for prescription and off-the-shelf drugs. There are indirect costs, including the productivity losses from absenteeism, early retirement to disability, higher insurance premiums, increased worker compensation claims, and there are social and economic costs, including lower wages, caregiver wages, and overall diminishment of one's quality of life. When added up in dollar terms, obesity is costing the United States of America $173 billion per year in direct medical costs alone. This epidemic of obesity is totally out of our personal control, but what is not out of our control is ourselves. And so today we pause to ask, what should we feed the family? Well, who better to ask than Jill Troterman, a mom who raised 2 hungry boys, an award-winning holistic nutritionist, and who is also the author of The Food Tree, Holistic Nutrition and Wellness Curriculum, a mind, body, and soul approach to teaching kids how to eat well and be healthy. Jill Troterman, welcome to The Food Chain.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, obviously, we are eating something that is causing us to become obese in a major way. What is it?
That is a loaded question. Where to start?
Well, I got to thinking about this, and surely it must be something obvious that is causing such a big, if you'll pardon the pun, problem.
Yeah.
It has to be something really big. And I figured, well, let's figure out what it is, and then we'll put a tariff on it. So when you stand back on top of a hill and look down into the valley, what do you see as the cause of all of this obesity?
Well, the glaring problem is food processing, that we are manufacturing our food unlike we did hundreds of years ago.
Or even not that long ago.
Indeed.
Because one of the things I'm most grateful for in life is having a mother who was a farm girl. And that meant we ate very close to the ground. And we ate big meals twice a day. And it was always a family dinner, even when we didn't want it to be. It was always a family dinner of whole foods grown close to the earth. Not so much anymore.
That's right, Michael. So 90% of all food that is eaten comes from a box in the United States. So most people are eating foods that are not grown from the ground. They're coming from factories and they're being processed, like I said before. So the problem with this is that the chemicals that are found in these foods are very addictive. They're highly palatable foods, and people crave those.
What do you mean, highly palatable foods?
that means these foods are very high in salt and fat and sugar. It's like a trifecta of endorphins in our brain that we just want more and more and more of that. But the problem with that is while the food might taste really good, it doesn't often contain a lot of nutrients. So what happens is our body, with all its infinite wisdom, will constantly seek more nutrients. And when you're eating these foods that are coming from packages, you're microwaving them, they're frozen, they are nutrient deficient. And so people are craving nutrients. So they eat more and more and more and more.
Of less and less and less and less.
Right.
The other element here that captured my attention is that one in five children are obese, but 2 in 5 adults are obese. So it seems as though there's a progression there. What we are taught when we're young becomes doubly manifest when we're older.
It does, because there are studies that show that obese parents will produce obese children, unfortunately. So there is a cry to get yourself healthy before you do have your children. And it also shows that by the age of 6, that is a very good predictor of what your body will be like as an adult.
So it's food in boxes.
It's food in boxes.
As simple as that.
I really think so. I mean, really what I teach is whole foods like you grew up on. Mm-hmm. So make food from scratch, make beans from scratch, use fresh produce from the farmer's market, grow your own food, try as best you can to make your own food.
So if we wanted to discourage eating food from boxes, maybe we should put a tariff on them. That seems to be the word these days. So why not put a tariff on food that comes from boxes that causes obesity?
Right. Well, we like choices in America. I mean, that is one of the foundational benefits that we do have choice.
We have the choice to eat bad food.
We have the choice to eat bad food. We should know, consumers should know, like we, like the tobacco industry years ago did a number on us because they were telling us that doctors approved of cigarettes for all kinds of things. And it's the same thing that we've been misled. So the consumers don't really know how toxic these foods are, and they continue to eat them. So who's in charge? Who needs to take responsibility for that? Is that the consumer, the eater, or is it the government?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a question we're going to pick up later in the show when I put you in charge of everything. So be prepared for that one. I'm wondering, though, if there is such a direct cause and effect for people who eat food in boxes and grow to be extraordinary sizes, there's a huge cost for that.
Mm-hmm.
And those people who suffer from obesity know about these costs directly. The rest of us know about it indirectly. Because it all hits us, not only in the pocketbook, but in terms of our quality of life. So why have we let it go? What were we not thinking to just let it go and grow? What is it? It's doubled in 30 years, the extent to which we're becoming obese. What did we miss? What were we not paying attention to?
Well, we also have a lot of commercials that are constantly, so let's talk about kids for a second. So kids see about 11,000 commercials a year.
Wow.
So that's a lot. And it's probably gone up, you know, considering with all the social media and advertising on different platforms and whatnot. So think about a parent. How many messages?
And the time they now spend on social media on their electronic connected devices.
100%. That could be 6 hours a day. So if those kids are getting so many messages, the parents and their family and loved ones need to at least match that 11,000 messages, if not double that message. I think, where we have to really get into the education. And a lot of parents don't like being what you might call the bad guy. And that's actually the job of a parent, is to say no to your children.
You could see that every time you go to a supermarket, too, and you watch moms in the cart and the little kids right behind them. I once, when I was a kid, was taken grocery shopping with my father, which meant my mother must have been having another sibling. But at any rate, I saw a six-pack of Dr. Pepper that had a free plastic rocket in it. And I spent the whole time there cajoling my father into buying me a six-pack of Dr. Pepper, to which he finally assented. And so when we got home, I went to and got the six-pack of Dr. Pepper, and I grabbed a plastic rocket and took off. And he said, "Just a minute, son. Come back here." He sat me down at the kitchen table, and he had me start drinking Dr. Pepper. And you know what, Jill? I remember that Dr. Pepper event in my life, and I haven't been able to drink Dr. Pepper since then. But I've also come to recognize that I was the victim of something that probably everybody gets to be a victim of when it gets right down to it. And that the trick my father played on me by giving in to my pleadings was that it taught me a lesson that lasted for a long, long time. And I guess you're a mother of two boys.
I am.
Did they ever talk you into buying Dr. Pepper?
Well, it wasn't exactly Dr. Pepper, because I got I infiltrated them. I infiltrated them pretty early. What happened in my experience as a mother is, after sporting events, Little League, soccer, all the parents were tasked with giving snacks out at the end of the game.
Right.
So my kids would get these horrible candy bars and all kinds of nonsense, and I would look at the ingredient list, and they would watch me read the ingredient list, fretting like, "Oh, this is not going to be good. She's going to tell us not to eat it." And at some certain point, I would tell them that this packaged food contains X, Y, and Z, and I don't think it's a good thing for you to eat. And I would let them have the choice. And sometimes they would eat it, sometimes not. But at the end of the day, once I really studied nutrition myself and got into this field, my kids took me seriously. And then they did start making their own conscious choices once they really understood what these kind of bad foods were doing to themselves.
Pretty much started with being a mother.
It was being a mom I knew what I was up against. And of course, I wasn't too intense, but.
Okay, so we're going to pick that up when we come back, because that's really where I wanted to go with you. You're a mom of two hungry boys. And I remember being a hungry boy myself. I'll never forget it. Mostly because I never forgot being fed good food and what that meant to have a mother who provided that good food and a father. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Jill Troterman. Today we're asking, what should we feed the family? And it's a good question, too, because our nation is going out of control, obese. So do stay tuned. We will get control of our lives when we come back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking what to feed the family. And it's a fact, and a real sad fact, that our nation is becoming obese at an alarming rate that's costing the nation hugely, $173 billion per year in direct costs. And that's not to mention the indirect costs. Some of us pay those costs right out of our pocket. Others pay it out of our taxes. So that huge epidemic is beyond the capacity of any individual to come to grips with, but we have to come to grips with it ourselves. And that's something that we can come to grips with, is ourselves and how we eat and how we feed our family. And with us here to help us discuss and come to grips with how to feed the family, we have Jill Troderman. Not only is she a mother of two boys who have since grown up, and that's when you know you've done a good job, is when the boys and girls grow up and they go out into the world and they behave themselves and they're healthy and fit and smart. That's when you know all of the work that you did as being a parent was worthwhile. Mm. So, and what came first, the nutritionist or the mom? Or did it happen at the same time?
Well, I was always interested in health and food and healthy green living, you could say. And I ate very well when I was pregnant. And so I was highly aware. I was. And it only came into full bright light when the kids really went off to school. Well, maybe even before that, when the grandparents got a handle on them and the grandparents wanted to feed them, you know, all kinds of
what
stuff.
They want, right? Dr. Pepper.
Dr. Pepper and other things.
Yeah.
But yeah, when they got older, that's when it really kicked in to high gear, where I really knew I had to get into their minds a little bit more.
So obviously that you fed yourself well when you were pregnant was a very big deal. And that becomes manifest pretty quickly when the child is born and healthy and happy. How did you come to grips then? How did you really become the nutritionist? Was it as you fed your children, deciding what to feed them, how to feed them?
Yes, it was. I had my own some health complications myself, and I went to the doctor, and they only had pharmaceuticals to fix me. And I knew intuitively that there had to be another way to fix me from the core. What I wanted to get to the root of what was happening. And it was just some common imbalances that a lot of people suffer from. And so I fired my doctor, honestly, and then I went to nutrition school because I wanted to figure out how to fix my imbalance. It was a hormone imbalance. And I was totally fascinated that there was a whole nother world out there that could help people that wasn't really talked about, with nutraceuticals and herbs and foods, lifestyle, all kinds of things that were very easily to access and very easy to fix.
So at this point, it would seem that you made a decision to turn away from allopathic medicine toward a more holistic form of medicine based on food.
100%.
Wow.
Yeah, I did. And it helped. And it's a work in progress, of course. Like, we all have to manage ourselves every single day. But to me, it really blew my mind how food is our medicine.
And that so many of us, what did you say? Most of us eat food from boxes?
Yes, 90%, if not more. 90% of all our food comes from packages, yes.
So then you're really becoming a revolutionary because you're not eating food from boxes. So where do you find food that doesn't come from boxes?
Right. Well, I buy a lot of food wholesale. So I'll buy about 25-pound bags of beans, and I buy bulk and cook a lot. And I'm trying to figure out the time I spend in the kitchen compared to the cost that it would take me to buy those foods already prepared in the store or a restaurant. And I think I'm saving money and saving time. And I think I'm getting a lot more nutrient density and quality and enjoyment from my food.
We recently did a radio show about children's food packages, or packets, baby food packets. They come in plastic bags with plastic nipples, and it's pureed foods.
Right.
And, you know, the discussion was, well, you don't really know what the heck's in the bag, but you can pretty much guess. It's the same thing that's in the boxes, right, that we eat. But the discussion became focused on time.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things are all time savers in that you get them from the grocery store and you stick it in the kid's mouth and here, kid, take this. But you can do the same kind of pureed food at home, but it takes a little longer. So it becomes a rush. And I wonder if the rush to eat isn't the root cause of eating in out of boxes and the obesity.
Yes. So, you know, you could take it back to the Industrial Revolution. And in the early 1900s, that's when they started to really manufacture foods, when they started to make Crisco oil. And to make
TV dinners.
And TV dinners, because we want to get, you know, everybody into the workforce. And this is going to be convenient. It's going to save you time, energy, and money to buy all these foods already prepared. I think we were sold a myth.
Well, it wasn't a myth. It was just not the truth.
Not the truth.
You know, food in boxes is easy to eat.
It is, but what are the long-term repercussions of that food, right? So that's what we have to really break down. It's a perception, perhaps. I mean, sure, I've eaten plenty of things out of boxes, and I still do. If you came to my house, you would find probably some chips in the cupboard and various items. So I'm not a Puritan or an Amish person by any stretch. But
sometimes I think I would like to be an Amish person.
I have a fantasy too. I'll see you on the farm with
see
our...
See you on the farm, yes. Because I'll be the one shoveling out the stall, I'm sure, no doubt about it. But there is the perception and the reality that eating food out of boxes is easy, but not so much in the end, if that's where so much of our obesity and other health-related problems are coming from. It's not just obesity, it's celiac disease, it's gluten intolerance. Where the heck did that come from? It's autism, and on and on and on and on. So it's not just obesity that we're getting in the boxes.
It's not. It comes all, it's multifaceted. So the crops today are sprayed with a chemical called glyphosate. That's a chemical found in the herbicide called Roundup. So this is a massive toxin. It destroys our gut linings. So that's
and you
what,
talk about hormones.
Hormones, right. So all these toxins are sprayed on our foods. The plastics themselves are endocrine disruptors. So we're ingesting not just manufactured processed food, we're also exposed to toxins in the fields that are impregnated into these foods. So all these children are eating massive amounts of chemicals, and that's also causing obesity and psychiatric issues, depression, sleep issues, all kinds of stuff. Heart disease, like you mentioned, fatty liver disease. In fact, there's this case right now where a young child is suing a food manufacturer for his health complications because he felt like he was misled and essentially was abused by the system. So we'll see how
watching
that goes.
Too many commercials on TV, right?
Right. And he just had a diet of, I don't even know what these foods are, but pizza pockets and sure, just all kinds of whatever those foods are that are very easily to buy for kids, whatever they call kid foods. Which I have an issue with.
Baby food pouches.
Same with the baby food pouches. And then kids start craving these things because they're colorful and they think they want them.
And the other element is sugar.
Sugar, that's
it. Or even worse, artificial sweeteners.
The worst. Yes, aspartame is a neurotoxin. It stimulates cell death. Also all of the artificial colors, all the artificial flavors. And then the oils, like hydrogenated oil is often found in these packaged foods because these are cheap products. These are cheap ingredients And that's essentially the problem with a lot of these manufactured foods.
So when somebody comes to Jill Troderman, say, Jill, where do I start? What am I going to do? I'm totally out of control. I'm eating food out of boxes 95% of the time. Where do I start?
I know. It seems like a big
You know, if you think about it, if you're taught how to eat food out of boxes from the get-go, what chance do you have as you grow older to eat real food?
Right. You need to learn how to cook, I suppose. I mean, I honestly had a friend come to my garden not too long ago, and he didn't realize that an orange came from a tree, you know, or here's a strawberry from the garden. Like, smart people are really unaware basic food stuff. So as far as how to get families back into the kitchen, if you're a novice in the kitchen, start with the foods you like. So let's say you like pizza. We'll figure out how to make pizza dough. And make the get the toppings, make a sauce. Start with things that you like and enjoy, and
first,
make it pleasurable.
Set aside some time.
You have to set aside some time.
You have to set aside the time.
And it's the most beautiful thing, honestly. When you start to eat well, it's a gift you give to yourself and your family.
Amen to that. Now, you have to sell that somehow as a nutritionist.
Right.
I mean, you can't just tell people that. You have to sell that.
Yeah, that's why people like to take like the Ozempic, all these pills. They want a quick fix. It's tough. I have a hard job. I really do.
It is a hard job.
Right. And it's easier to get people when they're already on board. So it's harder for parents and people who haven't led this type of a lifestyle, obviously. But these are the people who I want to access. I want to take your hand and hold it. And I want to bring you to the farmer's market. And I want to walk down that aisle with you and teach you how to make steamed or sauteed broccoli that's going to taste amazing. And I want to teach you how to make things, how to make food for your family that's going to taste great. They're going to love it. They're going to want more of it. And they're going to feel healthy. And it's going to be a really positive experience. But it's a mindset. It's something that you're going to have to want to make happen.
How long did a teacher take to teach your boys how to want that food?
It was almost instantaneous. They grew up in that kind of a lifestyle. I mean, trust me, they had plenty of candy and ice cream and all that kind of stuff. And they balanced.
They're boys.
They're boys.
How are you going to keep that from?
100%. But yeah, they get it. Like, they can manage their life. And I think that's what we want to teach people, is that you can not be, you don't want to create a neurosis. You don't want to create an eating disorder. You just want to eat healthily because it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
So how did my kids do it? They learned and they appreciated eating really good quality food.
Because you cooked the food.
I cooked the food. My mom was an amazing cook. So we were, my brother's a chef. So we created a great food environment. It was a happy, positive experience. It wasn't a negative, torturous experience to sit down at the dinner table. We enjoyed it. It was fun.
You know, I think if there is a key to this, it's family dinners.
That's huge.
And finding time to have family dinners.
Right. Yes. Have family dinners, and also don't cater to your children like you're a short order cook. Because I think that's another problem that parents get into, is that Johnny doesn't like this and Susie doesn't like that. So the mom or the dad's trying to appease them. No, don't do that. Make a really nice variety of foods that you know most of all your children are going to enjoy. And if they don't like a certain food, don't make a big deal out of it. They don't get to eat that, fine. But the next meal, they might have all their favorite foods on the table. But it's being consistent and being firm.
Which is what hardest thing in the world for a mother and father to do.
It is.
It's right down to it.
I know.
Because the kids are always contending. They want the food in the box that has a lot of sugar in
right.
it, and that's the way of it. But you have to sell, as a nutritionist, that would be your principal job, is to sell.
Right, and I have to sell health, and I really do it by, my motto is educate, empower, and inspire. So first you have to educate. Why do we even want to have broccoli? So my whole thing is you want to have the three macronutrients.
Now, so when you address this with children, the why, and you say macronutrients, kids go, what?
Right.
It's a macronutrient. So you have to come to grips with some way of getting through that natural skepticism. I don't have to do anything. I'm going to do what tastes good and what my friends are eating too.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of peer pressure. So I created an eating model called the Food Tree. And so this is a very intuitive eating guide. So the proteins are the roots of the tree. So I teach the kids, eat like the tree. So you want to have a stable ground. You want to be like a shining tree, strong, flexible, beautiful. And the trunk are the whole grains. The branches represent healthy fats. The leaves are the vegetables and the fruits are the fruit. So I teach the kids, when you eat all of those food groups, you are going to be a shining tree. Who doesn't want to be that? And that's what the kids like.
Yeah, so it's an image that they can pick up.
100%.
And come to grips with and have suck. Well, okay, I'm bored so far. But when we come back, I'm going to appoint you as I can. Only I can right now because I am the host of this radio show. So I'm going to appoint you to become Assistant Secretary for the United States Department of Health and Human Services and take over as Robert Kennedy Jr.'s second in command to take over. Oops, that was something. And so this is the Food Chain Radio program, Michael Olson with Jill Troderman, who is Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Health. Oh, you're not.
Not yet.
Not yet. Well, you're going to be in a few seconds. So
thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We're going to put Jill Troderman in charge of helping us come to grips with obesity. You stay tuned. We will be right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freeze. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say,
so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's a fact. 1 in 5 children are obese. 2 in 5 adults are obese. And the rate at which we are becoming obese is growing double. It's doubled since 1990. The cost is incredible. We have to do something, and we have to do it right away. What are we going to do? Well, I, Michael Olson, as host of the Food Chain Radio program, imbued with a literary license, and we are going to hire Jill Troderman, who is a certified nutritionist, award-winning certified nutritionist. We're going to hire her to be the Assistant Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services, and we're going to hire her to teach us how to feed the family, because that's what we need to be doing, because whoever's feeding the family right now, not so good. So we're going to figure that out. Jill came as the new assistant secretary. Do you feel empowered?
Yes, and I accept the position.
Okay, we're off to the races then. Where do we start? You have a food tree that you told us about in the last section of the show, in which you developed a way of talking to children about what they should be eating. Eat like a tree, and you'll grow up to be a shining, healthy human being. Let's start with that food tree analogy that you have developed. You actually have developed a program around the food tree, right?
I have, and I've been using it for over 15 years in schools all around America and the world, actually.
So you've learned how to talk with children about this.
I have, and I talk to the parents as well, of course.
Well, that's who I think we should address ourselves to today, is the adults in the room, if there are any. Most of we're all children at heart when it gets right down to it. But let's approach this as adults and use your food tree and see how far that can take us. What is the food tree to us when we think about a food? Typically, the government offers us a way to eat based on a plate, a pyramid, or some other kind of device, and they divide it up into parts. You use a tree. Why do you use a tree?
The tree is more organic and relatable. It's alive as we are. And it also, the tree, in contrast to what the USDA is putting out, has the 3 macronutrients on it. So mine has proteins represented, carbohydrates, and fats represented. The USDA food plate, unfortunately, doesn't include fats.
Ooh.
Yeah.
The most difficult nutrient to get in nature are the good fats.
100%. Like, we get our good fats from fish, nuts, seeds, dairy, a whole bunch of other things, meat. They don't include that. And so I think one of the reasons that our nation is in such a crisis is because of confusion, food confusion. I'm not going to say that's intentional, but people are misguided in really what they need to eat. And those adults, those parents who have to raise those children are confused. So we're raising generation after generation of confused eaters. And it's really not complicated.
And thus you see where 1 in 5 children are obese. When they grow up, it's 2 in 5.
Right.
So what we learn as young people about eating wrong, we amplify as adults.
Yeah, and it's really, really tricky for children to change, because they do say statistically by age 6, you're
fixed.
Predetermined, which is very, could be depressing.
Your software is written over the first year.
Yeah, we're habitual. And so I want to help parents and children start off on the right track.
Let's start off with the food tree. At the bottom, at the base, what do we have?
Right. At the bottom, we have 5 servings of proteins. And that could be from plant-based or animal-based, depending on your diet choices. And then we have the whole grains represented on the trunk of the tree.
Let's start with, go back to the proteins.
Sure.
Because it seems to be something we have a war over, what kind of proteins we should be eating. And this war has been going on forever. Mm-hmm. You know, even looking back to the days of the Bible and the Apostle Paul talking to the early church, and everybody squabbling over whether they should eat vegetables or meat. way back then.
Right.
Still, and he, what he's saying, just forget it. Just eat whatever you're being served. If you go to a vegetarian, eat vegetarian. If you go to a meat eater, eat meat. So
yeah,
get over it.
Exactly. But this is a massive topic because there's a lot of push right now to eat a plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. I actually happen to eat a plant-based diet. However, you have to pay very close attention to what you're eating because it is true. Vegetarians and vegans may have deficiencies in a certain things like vitamin B12, which is mostly found in animal products. So you do have to be careful about supplementing or eating nutritional yeast or other products that might have that in there. Like fermented food has vitamin B12.
Okay. So you really can't just go and get a fast food burger and think it's a complete meal without some kind of you can't get a vegetarian meal without figuring out where to get those other nutrients.
You do have to pay attention, especially when you're raising kids, because you could have emotional issues, hormone imbalances. So it's definitely something valid to pay attention to, but you can do it. I don't like to get into fights with people about what kind of quote unquote diet they're going to eat. I'm more curious about if they're getting all of the nutrients they need.
Okay.
So that's why we can go back to the proteins. I recommend 5 servings a day.
So that's a lot.
Well, it could be, but it's really just a serving amount. So a 200-pound fella is going to eat a lot more than an 80-pound a young person.
Okay. Best protein for a carnivore and best protein for a vegetarian.
I would almost say fish would be a great protein for people. Eggs is wonderful. Chicken, again, I'm all about quality. So if you're going to eat chicken and beef, I'd make sure you're eating really high quality foods.
With respect to that, I always say that if we are what we eat, then we are what we eat ate.
Yeah. Right. So what are the chickens being fed certain kind of grains? Do those grains contain glyphosates, et cetera, et cetera? It is.
Yeah.
We are in the food chain and we are the top eaters.
So
we're going to accumulate those extra pesticides and things like that.
Okay. What about the best protein for a vegetarian?
Vegetarian, my go-to would be beans. Beans and rice. And listen, there's countries around the world who the vast majority of their population eats a vegetarian. Mexico, and it's really not that complicated to combine those foods. Nuts and seeds, again, are wonderful, too, for proteins, for vegetarians.
Okay. And to get the fats?
Healthy fats, again, in that same category as proteins, you're going to go for animal fats, or you're going to go for plant-based fats. So I like to encourage people to eat what I consider 4 groups, omega-3s, omega-6s. Those are essential. You have to eat those in food form.
Because the body does not manufacture it. You have to get it from the outside.
100%. You have to eat it. Whereas, for instance, saturated fats, which are butter and coconut oil, if you don't eat enough of those foods, your body will manufacture those. So I know there's a lot of controversy about saturated fats are bad. That's another thing with me as the assistant health secretary. I will help demystify
That's a great mystery, too, to demystify.
We're going to demystify because saturated fats are essential to a healthy diet. Our brains are made up of saturated fats, our sex hormones. Saturated fats are precursor to those. So we absolutely want to have those. And I do love that our body makes them, whether you want to eat them or not.
Whether you want to eat them or not.
Yeah. So those are some good healthy fats.
I think that was one of the greatest controversies put upon our food chain was done so by the American Heart Association.
Yeah.
When they suggest that we must get off saturated fat and we must get on vegetable oils.
Yep.
Big boo-boo.
Big boo-boo. So now we're reversing that right now, which is why there's all the talk about this.
Which is why we need an assistant secretary. Okay.
Let me be of service, America.
You have your job cut out for you on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. And so 5 helpings of protein. How many of fats?
I recommend 3 servings of fats because fats contain more calories.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to have the same quantity as a protein as a fat because it's double, more than double in calories. So you want to have 3 servings. And I like to have a variety of the polyunsaturated, those omegas.
You want to have some monounsaturated, which would be things like avocado and olive oil. Who doesn't love that? And then the third category are those saturated fats. Those are the butters and the coconut oils, are the solid fats at room temperature.
Find good fats. You need them.
And you will be a happier person.
You know, also good fats burn slower than a diet of simple carbohydrates. Yep. So you have a slow burning fire of oak wood in your stomach instead of newspaper, which burns really quickly and it's gone.
Yes, you're going to be more sustained with your energy. You're not going to have those blood sugar spikes up and down. You're going to have good mental health.
Good.
And you're going to feel satiated.
Protein, good fats.
Good fats.
Carbohydrates?
Carbohydrates. That is like another hot topic. You have to have carbohydrates in your diet. Our body's main source of fuel comes from sugars. So in my world, I would recommend half of your calories come from carbohydrates. And I know a lot of people are falling over and calling the sheriff's department. But let me just say, Michael, that carbohydrates are made up of vegetables and fruit.
There are good carbohydrates and there are poor carbohydrates.
Right. And so the poor carbohydrates would be the processed sugars, candy, white flour products, stuff like that.
They're the ones that have a high glycemic rate.
Indeed.
And they're the ones that burn like newspaper in the fireplace.
Right.
Whoosh.
Whoosh, it's gone. And then you're hungry again in 5 minutes.
Yes.
So you want to have those slow burning carbs with a lot of fiber. And that's a trick. So meat eaters, if you're on a strict meat carnivore diet, you're missing out on a lot of the carbohydrate benefits, which are the antioxidants you're getting from your fruits and vegetables. Those beautiful antioxidants that everybody needs. And you're also getting, you need fiber. Everybody needs to have fiber, and there's no fiber in meat.
Yes, we understand that fiber is good also because it feeds the little tiny microbuggies that inhabit our bodies to the tune of trillions of them or something like that.
You're 100% correct on that, right. So those are the carbohydrates, so don't be afraid, people, of carbohydrates. You want your body to first burn sugar, secondly, fat, and then tertiary is protein. That's how our body prioritizes energy burning.
So protein last?
If you're burning your protein, you're burning your muscles. Nobody wants that.
No.
No, that's not a healthy. That you're on a good situation.
So best carbohydrate?
Whole grains are, again, to compare my food program, the food tree, to the food plate, our USDA recommends 11 servings of grains a day.
Wow.
I only recommend 5. And I recommend 100% whole grains, where the USDA only says half should be whole. Right? So that's a little...
Okay.
So there's...
Well, you're going up against a dominant paradigm.
I know.
As a new Undersecretary of Health and Human Services.
I hope I get support in this. But so you want whole grains, you want fruits, you want vegetables. So you want about 5 servings of vegetables a day. You want fresh vegetables and cooked, and you want 3 servings of fruit, and try to make them in season.
Oh, because that's when they taste good.
That's when they're the best, and that's when we're going to get them organically, and maybe you're going to even start growing some fruits and vegetables yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now.
And that's essentially what the food tree is, those 5 food groups.
Okay. What about rhubarb pie? Where does that fit in?
Well, clearly that's a vegetable.
Okay. Fair enough. So one of the things, I just ran into some people who were talking about a local school who was given an additional acre of land so that the kids could grow food and the food could be made into their school lunches.
I think that's brilliant. And guess what? They do that all over Europe and Asia. Most other nations actually prepare children's food from scratch. America is the only place that we're eating packaged foods heated in microwaves. I love that idea, Michael. Where is it?
Where is it?
Let's emulate it.
It's right here in Santa Cruz, California.
Brilliant.
Yes. And it is brilliant, you know, to see kids being given a hand in the soil and learning just what it feels like to have a hand in the soil. Big deal.
That is the hugest, best gift you could give to a child, for them to know where their food is coming from, and then they eat in, they're getting all those fresh nutrients.
I think this is the model for the future.
So as Assistant Undersecretary of Health and Human Services, I see one of your biggest jobs is going to be in educating the general public.
There's going to be a lot of work, but I'm ready to do it. Okay. I've been ready for this for over a decade now.
Okay. So you're going to get up on a white horse.
I'm going to be coming knocking on your door. This is a free choice. We are a free planet. We're a free nation. And I encourage everybody to make healthy choices.
Well, that's been a lot of fun. And I think you're absolutely right, because I think we need to come to grips with our obesity. But it's not just our obesity. It's so many other ailments that we're picking up for eating wrong things. And a lot of the things in our food are not the right things for us to be eating. So Jill Troderman, certified holistic nutritionist and educator and author of The Food Tree. And you're at jilltroderman.com. Easy to find. Thank you all for tuning in. Remember Michael Olson's second law, or third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.